Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian, you can find on Twitter at PureRockFury. And we're here with Damien, you can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Chris is on a short mini vacation this week, so we're going to do it without him. Our number one for the week is Bounty Number One on Dark Horse by Curtis J. Weib and Mindy Lee. I'm not sure if it's Weib or Weeb. I think Weib looks right. Nobody cares. Okay. Over-under for the week is uses for Twitter. I mean, I don't feel like there's a ton of uses, but I think I got it. Leaves a transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? My week so far has not been the best. I will get into more detail later with my best thing ever, which is going to be totally an ironic best thing ever, so I know you're all waiting for that. But, I didn't do a lot of reading. I actually didn't do a lot of video games. I didn't do a lot of nothing. I sat on the couch and watched a lot of Orange is the New Black, because I'm not going to lie, I know Brian doesn't watch it. I don't know if you watch it.
I've watched a little bit of the first season, the first couple episodes, and I enjoyed it, but I haven't got into it yet.
Well, I really liked the first two seasons. The third season really kind of went off the rails for me, and I wasn't thrilled with it. This season is phenomenal, I'm not going to lie. So I've been watching a lot of that and trying to plow through it so that I can move on to whatever next show happens to come in front of my eyeballs. But other than that, I just read the last 2 weeks, number ones of The Rebirth, because Mike and I did that podcast, which you can go back and listen to. We put that out last Friday. So, other than that, nothing much. Brian's got a new flannel shirt, if anyone cares.
I don't have a flannel shirt. I'm wearing my work clothes right now.
He's a lumberjack.
I am a lumberjack, yes. A very fancy lumberjack or a very sloppy office employee. Somewhere in there. Let's see. I don't know why I kind of hate myself for liking Russell Brand as much as I do. Like, when he first became a thing, I was like, this guy is not funny, he's not that clever, and he's kind of irritating. And then he kind of blew up, and then he kind of disappeared for a minute, and then he started coming back. But there was that one interview we did about 2 or 3 years ago with the BBC where he just went on this epic style rant, and I was like, oh my god, I think I love Russell Brand now. And the last 2 days I've spent in the car listening to his most recent appearance on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I think I officially love Russell Brand now.
Nice.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but like, I find his viewpoints wildly fascinating and kind of inspiring in a weird way. He's like Bill Hicks minus the negativity. A little bit.
Yeah. I've heard a few things he said in the recent past, and he always seemed to be pretty clever, enlightened sort of guy.
Yeah, all his rants today, or not today, but while I was listening this morning, he turned me onto this book by a scientist by the name of Robert Lanza. I can't remember the name of the book, but I bookmarked it on my Amazon list, and it's what I'm planning to get soon. Something about the nature of reality and like how we perceive it versus what is possibly real. It's kind of on the whole Elon Musk thing we talked about a while back, about the computer simulation and how he thinks that we're all just part of a big computer simulation.
That is, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Kind of in the same realm. Something about, I forget the name of the book, but I have it bookmarked, and when I actually learn what it is, then I'll tell you.
Yeah, I love that kind of, I don't know, almost like philosophy. Like, I mean, the whole Schrodinger's cat idea, I've always really dug that.
Did you see that thing? I don't know if it's a comic or if it's a book or if it's some show or something. There's something, I just saw it, called Schrodinger's Gat, and it was a dude holding a gun.
No.
I don't know what it is, but I'm like, I'm kind of curious what Schrodinger's Gat is. That's pretty funny.
It's like a combination of Schrodinger's cat and like Chekhov's gun kind of thing.
Yes. You didn't happen to see the miniseries on Sci-Fi, that Childhood's End?
No, you know, I wanted to watch it. It looked interesting, but I never did. It was on in this period of time where I was watching like The Expanse and Orphan Black and all this other stuff, and it was like one too many shows.
How was The Expanse? Because that's another one I'm curious about.
It's okay.
It's just okay.
Yeah, I think it has potential, like as a long series. It's just basically Game of Thrones in space.
Oh, okay.
And by Game of Thrones, I mean like characters totally die, and in a way that seems like, oh, that shouldn't have happened right there, but it totally did. Okay, cool.
So in other words, don't get attached.
Yeah, don't get attached. But I like some of the actors quite a bit, and some of it's really cool, and I kind of like the way they handle space on that show. But I guess I was left feeling a little wanting, but just by the entire thing. It's good production value. Looks great. It also looks dark all the time. It also has that sort of Game of Thrones thing where everything seems filtered down a couple like levels of brightness. Like you gotta, you know, it's kind of hard to see stuff. But I don't know. It was certainly interesting. I'd kind of be more interested maybe to read the books.
Okay, because I was listening to another podcast where the chief of programming and sci-fi was doing this. He was talking about all the new shows, all the adaptations they're working on, how they're trying to reestablish themselves as a hard sci-fi network as opposed to ghost hunters and wacky reality shows about right. Bigfoot or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they talked at length about The Expanse and Childhood's End. And ever since then, I've been obsessed with Childhood's End. I was like, I got to find this show. I got to read this book. And I went on YouTube like two nights ago to see if I can find clips of Childhood's End, and all I found were video reviews by people who claim Childhood's End is actually Illuminati propaganda to convince people of the benefits of the New World Order. And they went through the whole religious thing, and this is all propaganda trying to turn people away from God, and I'm watching this stuff going, okay, now I'm really interested, like way more than I was. Because the whole, like, devil and Illuminati thing, like, now I'm sold. I'm totally getting that DVD. So I bought it today.
Well, definitely report back, because that sounds pretty fascinating.
Oh, I spoiled it for myself. I saw the big reveal of what Callan looks like, or Carolyn looks like. He's, like, the voice of the Overlord. And it's so amazingly on the nose. I was like, I could totally see why the Alex Jones type are super afraid that series is trying to establish the Illuminati.
That's great.
So now I'm like super pumped to watch this.
Nice. Well, that sounds pretty cool. My week was, let's see, what did I do? Well, I had my best friend's wedding was last week, which was really great. Super great experience. Him and his wife's vows were so funny and original and interesting, and I met tons of cool people, and just it was such a cool positive experience that I've decided to really like make some actual headroads in trying to salvage what's left of my happiness and try to just become a happier, better person, because that was such a cool positive experience. So I'm moving in that direction. That's a big one.
I like it.
Yeah. And then let's see, what did I do? I watched all of Stranger Things.
How is that? I only watched the first episode.
I liked it. I liked it quite a bit. I'm not going to say it was perfect. There's certainly some things that I had issues with. I don't know if they were issues because they weren't good or issues just because I would have done it differently. But, I mean, it's basically like Goonies, E.T. type of show meets like John Carpenter, all the way down to like the music, which is awesome. The soundtrack is great. It's got like Joy Division and the synth stuff on the soundtrack is really, really cool. Like very John Carpenter, if you're familiar with any of his soundtrack work.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Some of the effects are a little on the cheaper side as the show goes on, but that can be a little distracting, but because it's like, but by the time this happened, for me, I was totally in. Like, I was like, whatever, it can be fine. It could be, like, a couple guys in rubber suits, and I'm completely into it. Like, so, I think all in all, I definitely would give it a pretty high score if I was scoring it. But it had a couple faults, but I mean, you know, what doesn't? It was, I really enjoyed it. And it had this heart to it that maybe it's tied in, or maybe I'm projecting onto it because of this newfound move towards optimism that I'm trying to do and try to fix myself emotionally. But it definitely had this little heart that I remember when I was a kid, like sort of first loves and first little glimpses of adulthood and the kind of late childhood adventures. Like, there's sort of a sense of sort of wonder that comes with all of that, and it has a little bit of that, or maybe a lot of it, built into it in that show, and I think that really resonated with me. So I liked it quite a bit. I'm probably going to watch it again, actually, to try to get like a different perspective on it, but I thought it was really good. The kids are super good actors. Like, for kid actors, I was really, really impressed with those kids.
I was going to say, the one thing this week, aside from that first episode, that kind of got me a little bit bummed out in a weird way, was I was watching all the special features on Batman vs. Superman, and they were talking about the history of the characters and all the different storylines that influenced the movie, and all I kept thinking was, I was fully around for so much of this, and I completely just didn't pay any attention. Like the John Byrne Superman and Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke, all that stuff. I was fully, like, in. There was a comic shop that we used to go to regularly. We used to skateboard there all the time. But I went there to sell my baseball cards because I thought that was going to be my investment towards becoming Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Which clearly has not panned out. As evidenced by when Kirby Puckett passed away, I immediately went online to find out that the Fleer Kirby Puckett rookie card that I spent $7 on in 1986 is now worth less than it was when I bought it. So I am not one to give financial advice.
Those pogs, though, man, those are going to appreciate. You just wait.
Alf is back in pog form.
You just got to wait for Alf to come back on TV Land, and then once they come out the Jim Gaffigan crossover pogs.
That's weird.
I don't even know what pogs are, to be honest with you. I still to this
I think
day.
They're little cardboard circles with pictures on them.
And you could play like a game as kind of like quarters with them.
That is super awesome. I guess.
Sounds great, doesn't it?
I don't know. I remember them for like one summer.
Yeah, they were like, you know, jelly bracelets and swatch guards and that kind of thing. Like, came and went.
Well, maybe they will make a comeback. Yeah. They're not going to make a comeback.
I highly doubt it.
So, I don't recall what I was going to say because it was a while ago. So, I guess moving on, our number one for the week was Bounty, right? Mm-hmm. Bounty number one on Dark Horse. This was your pick, Damien, correct?
It was, yeah.
Sweet. Are you prepared to give us the synopsis?
Yeah, I'll give you a quick rundown. Sweet. It was another one of those picks that I picked because it was a number one available this week. and I saw someone say that there was like a fire. I was like, it's like Firefly. And I was like, well, I really like Firefly. Let's see. So I'm going to call Bounty a sci-fi bounty hunter comic, if the name doesn't give that away. About two sisters who run a kind of ragtag squad of bounty hunters and do their best to sort of make things go, or, you know, make money and be able to get their ship through space, and while the whole time kind of like trying to be on the lam from some, you know, overarching government that they are very wanted by for some sort of past crimes that seem possibly terrorist in nature. And that's the first issue is basically a bigger introduction to that world and that story and a handful of those characters. I guess it has a couple like almost vaguely superhero elements to it, and it's very fast paced, but all in all, I really wasn't that into it.
You know what? I'm gonna have to go right ahead and agree. It felt very Kim and Kim as far as the whole bounty hunter type of thing. I really like the universe that they're starting to portray, I suppose is the word, in this comic. But I feel like the way they introduce some of the characters just was more confusing than, like, all of a sudden they're just, you know, flying their ship, and it's 5 years later, and there's a guy in a fishbowl. Like, what?
Yeah, I didn't get that at all. Like,
I kind of think, like, after, you know, a couple more pages, that that's what, how they tried to portray this guy, this weird alien's hacking abilities of some sort, maybe?
Yeah, it was some sort of interface, but...
It was weird.
It felt like there was a bunch of pages missing or something.
Yeah, like, I feel like it could have been really good if they would have just taken their time to explain a little more about these characters, because you literally don't have a background on any of these guys whatsoever, not even the two main characters.
Or gals.
Or gals.
Nerd. You know what I mean? But, yeah. Like, I feel like I could be into it, but I feel like the first issue is not holding me.
Mm-mm. There wasn't much to hold on to. I mean, the Firefly reference, I was like, well, I get that right away. I mean,
right.
Definitely. You know, maybe a little Cowboy Bebop thrown in there, but I didn't really get it. I mean, I get it. I guess I got it. If I got it, I didn't like it. If I didn't get it, you know, there's something more compelling that could be happening, but there's not enough there for me to really even grab onto. Like, so I guess at best, I just didn't get it.
God, I was so glad to hear that, because I didn't want to be the only one to be like, there was a lot there, but none of it really fit, and it just... I feel like they just left out some really important stuff. Now, the saving grace for me is the fact that I've got it on my Kindle, and it cost me 99 cents. So
yeah, that was awesome.
That was good, but other than that, I don't know. I mean, I really dug the artwork. I'm not going to lie about that.
Yeah, well, it was well drawn for sure.
Yeah, well drawn, well written. Just the story didn't flow very well, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, allow me to go out on a limb and say I agree 100% with both of you. But I also the name Curtis Weeb or Curtis Weib stuck out, and I just looked it up now because I had the sneaking feeling that it was what I thought it was, and it was. Do you remember the book Pisces we did about a year ago?
Yep.
Same exact writer. Remember how we kind of felt like it was all over the place and it didn't, nothing, there was no thread keeping it together?
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I felt reading this. I'm like, what? Okay, now they're here. Oh, wait, and now there's three new people, and I don't know what the heck any of them are doing here. And I thought they were wanted, and weren't they captured? And, well, now they're flying around. I'm like, you know what? I don't even care anymore. So I blame the story on Curtis Weeb.
I almost wonder if he's more of a long-haul kind of guy. Like, you got to read the whole thing in order to get it, but that's... That doesn't really work very well in single-issue form, you know what I mean? Like,
I think it's weird. I think because comics do try to mimic TV and film a lot, and you can get away with that kind of disjointed storytelling in a movie because you can always... Because you're watching it all at once, so when they refer back to certain things, and then you're like, oh, I get that now. Okay, now it makes sense. Whereas with a comic, they do that to you in the beginning, expecting it, you're going to jump on for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. And by the time that you figure out what's happened at the beginning, when they maybe refer back to it in issue 7, they assume that you're going to stick with it for that long, and you may not.
Right.
And again, we've talked about this a million times, you know, they should give us more, but I don't necessarily want more in a number one, but I do want a reason to keep going. And this was so, like, kind of, like you said, it was like it felt like there were pages missing, and you're like, well, if this is all you're gonna give me and it doesn't feel like there's any sort of through line from any of these different parts, what's my incentive to go and spend $4 to get the next one?
Right.
Yeah. I feel like with comics, there's the writer has, you know, in his mind these characters are acting, sort of. And I'm not trying to compare comics to movies, because I think comics have, you know, there's comics have strengths that movies don't have, or TV or whatever, and movies have strengths that comics don't have, blah, blah, blah. But, like, when you have a movie, or, you know, when you have an actor up there, they can react in a way without saying anything. Like, you know, they can look at a door and look scared, and we can be like, oh, that person's scared to go in that room. You can't really do that as well with comics. You have to explain more. So, but with comics, you also get to you know, you get to add your own personal experience, and you get to, you know, kind of reflect, and, you know, a comic kind of becomes something different for everyone who reads it. And that's one of the things I really love about them, that you everyone relates to a comic in a slightly different way. It's not as spoon-fed to you as it is with movies and TV. But I did feel like this guy was writing for a TV show. Like, he was, in his mind, the actors were filling those gaps. They were projecting in a way, or their tone, or all these things that he can pick up on in his head would make it really easy to communicate. But we don't get those things. We don't get a sarcastic tone. We don't get someone sounding worried. We have to infer those things from the context. And I feel like he didn't give us any context to infer anything from. It feels just to me like someone who doesn't quite understand the medium. So he needs to be adding the audience into the storytelling. And I don't feel like he was doing that at all. I think he was just, you know, talking at the paper and writing everything down and being like, this is fantastic. It totally plays in my head. And it's like, yeah, it fucking plays in your head. Does it play in my head? I mean, that's what you need to write a comic for, the dumbest person who's going to ever pick him up.
This is true.
And I feel like in a lot of ways, that's me. And he needs to be writing it. Right?
It was true. It is like he was writing it down, and almost as if like there was, you know, the two different parts of his psyche, and one was going, no, you gotta explain some of these things, and then the other one's going, no, you'll explain it in issue 9, that'll be fine, it'll all make sense by that time.
Yeah, don't over-explain, which is true, don't over-explain, but I mean, you know, there's a medium, you know, there's halfway through. It doesn't need to be all yellow panels like the old Marvel comics, where you get, you know, tons of character exposition and stuff all the time. I mean, we don't have to do that as much anymore, because, you know, most people are pretty savvy to how to read comics, I feel, but I feel like this guy maybe is just... It was almost like a collection of tweets more than it was like a script or something.
Ooh,
I mean,
nice.
I don't know. So, to tie into the over-under.
Uses for Twitter, writing a comic.
I did almost wonder, though, when I was at work yesterday and I looked it up and I saw it was 99 cents. I'm like, this just came out and it's already a dollar. I'm like, that doesn't give me a lot of hope.
I wonder if it was just for the digital. I mean, obviously it was just for the digital, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it's Comic-Con. Maybe they're kind of pushing it for Comic-Con, so they want to get some excitement for people coming to the booth.
That's true. I mean, they've been, like, just throwing announcements out left and right already.
Yeah.
For this?
No, just in general. They announced that the Russo brothers are going to be developing Deadly Class for a television show.
I saw that.
Possibly for Netflix. And.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because by the time everyone hears this, San Diego will have just ended.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already... They're, like, really going, like, whole hog in terms of making huge announcements and getting all these celebrities involved. Like, Will Arnett's doing all these ads for it.
Crazy.
Writing on the back. What?
Is that book good, Deadly Class?
I read the first trade, and I really loved it. I thought it was super good. Like, if
I've
you were...
I always wanted to pick it up.
Yeah, it was, like, a school for assassins, but set in the mid-80s and all these... like punk rock references are made, is kind of a book that I would expect to be on Black Mask more than Image. But I think Rick Remender's got such a weird kind of large following now that I think he could pretty much do whatever he wants.
Well, I will definitely check that out. I've always thought it looked really cool. It's one of these books that's like, by the time I picked up on it, I was like, oh, it's been on for so long. I think I'll just wait for trades.
Yeah. Here's the worst part. I bought the number one of that. And then I read it, but at the time I was reading so much other stuff, and I was like, I'll just wait for the trades, and I've never purchased it since. No matter how much Brian and Chris, I believe, will tell you how much it rules, I just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, I've only read the first trade. I have the second one, I just haven't read it yet, but I loved the first one, and now they just came out with like this prestige hardcover with the first three volumes all in one big... gigantic hardcover for like $40, which, you know, it's pricey, but it's a nice conversation
piece. Library,
though. Yep.
Sweet. So are we ready to number this, or?
Yeah. I'll go first since I picked it. I gave it a 5.5.
Yeah, you know what? I'm right there. I'll just write down the middle, 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, 5. It was... I got the Firefly inference a little bit, but... I think it was just like, you know, bounty hunters in space, bounty hunters in space, Firefly, swish.
Yeah. I mean, the universe that he's creating is
really kind of awesome, but I don't. It was very just not well explained, I guess is the best way to put it. So, unless anyone's got anything else?
No.
All right. Well, recently, what was it, last week or in the last 2 weeks? What?
It was like 2 days ago.
No, I mean, I was just going to say the movie came out.
Oh, yeah.
So, in the last week and a half or 2 weeks or so, the new Ghostbusters has hit theaters. And honestly, Mike and I went. I enjoyed it. And Mike said, I mean, he went in hating it, and he even said that the thing he hated the most about it was the fact that he liked it so much. So that might tell you something. I don't know. Personally, I really liked it. I feel like it might have fizzled towards the end, but that's a whole other podcast, I guess. But I don't know how aware people are of the whole Leslie Jones snafu that's been going around Twitter, I guess.
I saw that. I heard a little bit about it. I didn't read too much into it, but, I mean, it's Twitter, and people are fucking monsters, so between those two things, I kind of put it together.
Yeah, it is amazingly just brutal.
Well, it's... Are you familiar with that Milo Yiannopoulos? Yiannopoulos, is that how it's pronounced?
I think I am familiar with that.
He's a writer, a commentator for Breitbart.com. Okay, he's like this new cult leader of hipster conservatives. He's really, like, almost admittedly racist and such. He's definitely misogynistic and not even trying to pretend he isn't. He's part of a new movement called Alt-Right, which is like this weird hipster, super fascist version of conservative. I don't even know. It's like all these weird young 25-year-olds that are conservative to the point of being obnoxious and super fascist. He is apparently the guy that started all this. Like, he started a thing against her specifically in the Ghostbusters movie, and like his followers just took it and ran with it. And people were creating fake accounts with her, using her name, saying all this horrible stuff. And then when they weren't using a fake account of hers and pretending she was saying all these horrible things, they were just coming right at her with full-blown racism. It didn't even take long for it to like devolve away from the movie and just throwing anything racist they could at her.
So shitty.
Yeah, and it all started around the whole Ghostbusters thing, and oh, you're trying to create this new man-hating version of a movie that everybody loves, etc., and it just went completely off the rails. Mm-hmm. To the point where this Milo guy had to be banned for life from Twitter.
Yeah, that's where I heard about him. I heard about that thing. Yeah, that's... Well, that sounds, first of all, great that they banned that guy, because I got a daughter. I don't want to... He doesn't need another fucking voice. Sounds like he's got an entire echo chamber that fucking will do whatever he says. As is. I mean, now he can play the persecution card and get even more, you know, fucking zealots on board with him. It's weird. The Ghostbusters thing was so fucking strange, because when I first heard about it, I was like, oh, that's a neat idea. It's pretty cool. Like, I didn't really care either way. And the only real disappointment I had about it, and I was like, is that it was a total reboot. I thought it was going to be just like Ghostbusters 4 or something, or 3 or whatever. Was there only 3? Yeah, it was only 3. Or 2, right?
There was only 2, yeah.
Okay. Not that I think that would be better, per se. It just, in my mind, that's what it was. Like, these were going to be, people just taking over the mantle. And in my mind, I was like, how rad it would be if, like, the original Ghostbusters had still been working up to this point, but they're older, and they were all killed at the beginning. Like, it's a horrible thing. So you get to see them just for a minute. Like, but, you know, it's probably a terrible idea. But then, you know, but when I heard this was coming out and who was doing it, I was like, well, this sounds good. Because, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is lame of me, but I actually really like all those other movies. I liked Bridesmaids. I liked The Heat. I liked Spy. I mean, they're not, like, you know, they're not fucking... you know, good for me kind of movies, you know, but at the same time, they're really dumb and funny. I think Melissa McCarthy's hilarious, so, like, her delivery is always so good that I'm, you know, I could just watch her fucking read the phone book and probably laugh. I mean, so I was like, yeah, I'm on board. I mean, I probably won't see it in the theater just because the movies I get to see are pretty few and far between, having a kid and all that stuff. I just don't get to go to movies by myself or with other grown-up people very often. So I'll probably see it on video, but I was on board at the end there. And then I heard about all that shit with Leslie Jones, and I was like, are you guys fucking kidding me? I mean, people have this, you know, we villainize celebrities all the time anyway, just because they're famous.
Right.
It's like you had the gall to make believe to be someone else on screen. Now that means you're fucking, you know, it's open game and I can say whatever I want to you because, you know, in the end of the day, you get paid for make believe and I'm sitting here working my real job. And people get so like shitty about that sort of idea that they should somehow be like, I don't know, it's almost like reverse entitlement. They feel like famous people have some level of entitlement. Maybe they do in some ways. They get, you know, free shit and stuff, and that's, of course, I want free shit. But I don't know exactly where I'm going with this, but I guess I'm just saying that I think people confuse, like, how you can kind of playfully be, you know, I walked into an elevator a few years back, and scrawled on the wall was some graffiti really big. It just said, fuck you, Bruce Willis. And I thought that was so funny when I saw it, because it was that, like, ridiculous like anger at someone who doesn't know and doesn't care and will never see it, but it was this like there's someone that we all know who it is and fuck that person. And there's a part of that's kind of funny where it's just like, yeah, like, you know, yeah, fuck Bruce Willis, you know, fuck Nicole Kidman, fuck those people, whatever, you know, but there are people, there are human beings, and they deserve, you know, to be treated with decency. And I don't see this whole fucking alt-right, which, yeah, I'm just kind of now learning about through you. I've heard about it on Twitter, and I kind of just pieced together what it was, but I didn't realize it was so... I thought it was more of like a pejorative. I didn't realize it was something they were actually calling themselves. But, you know, now that I'm kind of, you know, piecing this stuff together, mixed with, like, the anonymous platform, which is, you know, the internet, where you can just, without any sort of real consequences on yourself, like, just fire volleys at people and make them feel shitty. It's just, you know, between that and this Memorite stuff, I mean, it's just, there's all this kind of misguided anger from these dicks that just get off on hurting people. And it sucks that she had to basically just be like, I'm done, I can't do this anymore. Like, that she had a breaking point, you know?
Right. It's just weird because seeing this, and it came a lot also from the, I hate this term, but the geek community, comic book fans, video game fans, all this sort of thing. It came so heavily from that. It reminded me of like what happened to like punk rock and hardcore in the mid-90s. Before it kind of got bigger, it was like our thing. And it was like everybody was kind of friends with each other because we only had our thing. And then all of a sudden, it started to get more exposure and it brought in new people. And all of a sudden, it took on this whole new uber masculine kind of excitement over violence type of tone, and it just ruined it. And I think it suffered, it kind of ate itself. And I feel like this sort of thing is going to do the same thing to these movies, these TV shows, and these sorts of events where people gather together to, you know, have fun with these things. When people take it to the level of seriousness to where racism is all of a sudden considered okay because this person ruined my favorite movie franchise and they happen to be of this race, so this gives it me fair game to not only be a jerk about it but also to, you know, bring up things and make attacks like that. I don't know, I'm kind of like
rambling.
Yes.
You know, I just wanted to say, like, I've always been a huge fan of all, well, both of the Ghostbuster movies and the original cartoon that came out back when I was a kid. Used to love it.
You want the monkey?
The one where Slimer worked in the firehouse.
Oh, okay. Wasn't there like a Ghostbusters even before that?
There might have been.
In the 70s where it was like a giant monkey who like helped him fight crime or something. It was totally, never mind. That's maybe too deep a cut. We can come back to that. No, I know the one. I remember the guy who did the voice for Garfield did Bill Murray's voice, and Bill Murray did the voice of Garfield in the Garfield movie.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Learn something every day.
Yeah.
I remember when they announced the reboot or whatever. My only problem with it, and you know, I'm not trying to be mean here, but I hate Melissa McCarthy. I think she's just super annoying and whatever. So I was like, dude, anyone else but her. But having said that, 85% of the time in that movie, she was spot on. I don't know what. I mean, there was a couple of moments where she, you know, got into her little, you know, typical shtick, I guess. Mm-hmm. But overall, yeah, like, she was fine. That, oh, I can't remember the other lady's name now. Oh, I know a lot of people don't like Kristen Wiig. She was fantastic. Leslie Jones was lovely. Awesome as well. But, I mean, obviously the best of the four was...
Kate McKinnon?
Yes. She was fantastic. She was the best.
Yeah, she's really good. She's got, like, a physical comedy quality that none of those other girls have.
Yeah.
She can do stuff with her face. It's so weird.
Well, and that was the nice thing about Kristen Wiig and even Melissa McCarthy is, like, they weren't there so much to be, like, comedic as they were, you know, more of, I don't want to say serious, because let's face it, when I break it down, it is kind of a comedy, but... You know, they weren't the comedic leads in the movie, I guess is the way to put it.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So, well, I will definitely check it out in probably 6 months.
Right, I agree. I will too when it comes out on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, all those movies, what's the director's name again? Paul, not Paul Feig, is it? Is that his?
Yeah.
Okay. All of his movies, like all the ones I mentioned before, like, all of those movies to me are just kind of like the movie Super Troopers 2, where like the last half hour you can generally just turn it off. Like it's all done. Like all the funny has kind of happened. But it sounds like maybe Ghostbusters isn't quite like that.
Well, the end, I shouldn't say the ending, but you know, the final like big battle was, in my opinion, slightly a letdown. It wasn't as epic as I was hoping.
Yeah.
I did like the cameos from all the original Ghostbusters. It was all pretty awesome. Something else too. I don't remember. Oh, what's his face? Thor, help me out.
Chris Hemsworth.
He was hilarious in this movie. He plays an absolute dolt. Don't get me wrong, but he, yeah, it was funny.
I'm on board.
But yeah, shitty thing to do to single out one person because they, you know, your childhood movies in your eyes been ruined. Maybe you should see it first with an open mind before you start slinging hate.
Just saying. I don't think those guys got to that position with an open mind.
This is true.
I just think as far as like the, again, geek community should really like take a giant breather and think about like what actually is at stake when they start performing in this way on such a catastrophic level and so frequently lately. Every little thing, they lose their minds out and they attack people, they make death threats. What's the incentive for people to continue to provide you with this content if you're going to act this way? And secondly, this Milo Yiannopoulos guy, I don't know if he is the de facto leader of alt-right or if this is really a huge thing or just a small group of wastes of space, but every time I hear somebody go, oh, the youth, they're the ones that are going to step up and really make the changes that we've failed to do. I don't know. Every time I hear about an alt-right or a new group of high school skinhead thing, I'm just like, nah, they're just as bad, and they're going to suck, and the next group's going to suck, and they're going to continue to suck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, they'll burn themselves out when they stop getting attention.
Let's hope. But the problem is, with the media being the way it is, they'll never not get the attention.
That's true.
So, on that sad note, let's move on to Over-Under, which this week is uses for Twitter. This is probably going to be a fairly low-hanging fruit, but I feel that using Twitter to advertise for whatever it is you're doing is completely overrated because most people are following thousands of people, and the chances of your tweet being seen are few and far between, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I mean, if I open my Twitter right now, I'll look, and by the time I read the second tweet, I'll have a little notification saying, you have 200 new tweets. It's like, really? There's, you know what I'm saying? And then you hit refresh, and now you get the top three again. You already missed the whole 150. No one's seeing your tweets.
No, and it's like the people that I actually care about seeing something from, for some reason I seem to, even when I'm scrolling through, they catch my eye anyway. Like Miles Greb. Like I'll be like, what's he up to? I'll stop. It could be about anything. Like, I already care about Miles Greb. It doesn't have to be like whatever he advertised. But if someone that I happen to follow like posted something right before or after him, I wouldn't pay any attention to that.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't know. Like, I'm already curating it in my head. I try not to follow a million people. I actually try my goal, this is really dumb, but I try to make sure there's more people following me than I'm following them.
I wish at this point.
Makes me feel cool.
I'm close at this point. I got like, I think 1,800 people following me, and I'm following like 2,100. Trying really to easy. Equal that out, you know?
That's a lot. I only have like 700 followers, I think, or something. But it's really easy for me to cull some of mine, because every once in a while I'll be like, oh, wait, didn't I get really into The Flash at one point? Which I still am. I love that show. But I realize I'm following, like, every actor from The Flash and all the different Flash things. And it's like, well, I don't need all these. I mean, I can just, you know, I can just go on Reddit, the subreddit for The Flash, and find out all this stuff. So I can just unfollow all that stuff. It's like, yay, now there's more people following me than I'm following them.
I mean, Cisco's cool, but his Twitter's not that awesome.
No.
No, I used to follow some really idiotic things. I don't even know what the heck I was doing. Like, oh, yeah, Jim's Coffee Company. I'm like, I'm never going to buy Jim's Coffee because I don't live in Idaho.
Right.
Yeah, but I feel like if there's someone's tweets I want to read, I'm just going to go to their page. I'm not going to scroll through my feed and look for it, you know?
Yeah.
Personally.
Know. I don't know. Right. Anyway, my overrated for uses of Twitter, and I'm not knocking it because I've done it, and I may do it again in the future, but the Follow Friday thing. It's not that I don't like it, but every time I do it, I'm like, these are the same people I promoted like 2 weeks ago and a month ago, and like all those same people follow me back. So it's just like, I don't know all of them personally, but like I've talked to them all on Twitter about various, you know, podcast stuff or comic book stuff or whatever. So it's like we're all just kind of circle jerking each other off in a way.
Well, you know what? When I used to participate in the Follow Friday, when I had more time to do this kind of stuff at work, I would always make sure there'd be like two or three people that I would always blast out because, you know, like you said, we converse all the time. But I would always go and make sure that I was promoting people who have recently followed me or I followed them, you know, so it was fresh every week.
Right.
I just don't know if people actually look at that and go, oh my God, yes, new followers. Bloop, bloop, bloop,
you know what?
Bloop.
I started to, by like the last like month or two that I was doing it every Friday, I would go on there and follow everybody I possibly could, because what's the point if no, you know, if I want people to participate and follow me, I feel like I need to do the same, you know?
Right. That's a good point. I think for a while it was like, you know, you get, say, on the, I don't, it depends on how long someone's username is, but on average you get about 8 people on your Follow Friday list. Like if you include the hashtag, maybe fewer, maybe 6, maybe more. I don't know.
Right.
It depends on who, how many characters they have.
Well,
a lot of times it was more. I would try to pull like a few people from here and a few people from there, like that wouldn't maybe know each other. So maybe at the very least they would all like know of each other's existence.
Yeah.
But I kind of stopped doing it a few months ago. I don't remember why. I just kind of stopped, and once I stopped, I never appeared on anyone else's. So I was like, all right, whatever.
Jerks.
Fuck you guys.
You know what I actually did for a while, and not this has anything to do with Follow Friday, but I used to log on to this one website. I don't remember the name of it now, but I would just go on there, and it was really easy to just follow everybody that followed me, drop people that don't follow me anymore, and stuff like, you know, one of those little appy type programs.
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
I used Crowdfire.
I think it was Tweepy.
Tweepy?
I don't remember. I downloaded something and then changed the name to Crowdfire, and I haven't used it in a long time.
Did you guys ever use Favestar? You ever look at that?
Mm-mm.
You can go on there. I use it because this is neither my overrated or underrated, because I don't think it really falls into either. But I use Twitter mainly for the jokes. Like, there's a lot of people who are super funny. What's his name? Home Halfway. This guy. He's like one of the funniest guys on Twitter. There's tons of funny jokes. So you can go on Favestar and you can look up someone you think is funny, and it'll show you their most favorited tweet, and you can kind of start going down. You can do that to yourself, too. You can see, like, the you can put your own username in, and it'll show like your tweet that got the most favorites, and you can go back through it.
Well, if you guys go on there and start favoriting some of my tweets, I might actually have one.
Yeah, I know. Mine top out at about 8, but... Yeah. Oh, so yeah, my overrated. My overrated, and this came up a little bit this week, is people trying to hook up on Twitter.
Is that a thing?
Apparently.
Wow.
It is. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, or people are, you know, it's, I mean, I know it could be a thing. I mean, my friends who just got married, they actually met over Instagram. So, I mean, I know that kind of thing happens. Twitter seems weird to me because it's, even though it's not anonymous, like, especially mine, I think my username is my name. I mean, I mean, I follow people all over the world and the country and the world and all that stuff. And it's the idea of like trying to like cast out a net and see what you can get, you know?
Yeah.
Seems pretty weird from an individual perspective. But that said, especially female friends of mine say it happens to them all the time. The dudes will like try to talk them up on Twitter, and it'll be dudes who live like, you know, in New York City and they live in Seattle, and they're just like, what the fuck is this about? And I think it comes down to like, you know, early on in the chat culture, like, used to be able to, like, people would send, like, nudes and stuff back to each other, and that was real exciting. That's kind of worn off now. At least for me, maybe just because I'm old and those parts don't work as much as they used to anymore. but it's not, like, my first thought anymore. Like, I'm more interested to, like, have a conversation with someone that either I maybe knew a long time ago and lost contact with. Someone or just someone that seems interesting or someone that maybe like supports something I'm into, like whether it's this podcast or a band I was in or, you know, just I just kind of want to like use it as much as I can for like minor human connections, because they are very minor connections. I mean, 140 characters is all you get, and I don't imagine any of these being like, here's my phone number, go ahead and text me. Like, so I think the people who try to use this for hooking up seem to be very, it seems crazy to me, but I know what happens. There's a whole, I think it's an Instagram account. I call it like Instagram Casanovas, but I know it works for Twitter too. And girls will post like the horrible shit men say to them. And a lot of it is not men trying to be dicks, like, you know, fuck you woman or whatever. not that eloquent. Trying to be like sexy, like in that whole like negging way, like guys love, that's a whole like negging idea, like you'd be shitty to a girl and she'll like be nice to you because she'll try to like, because women are in the society are conditioned to like be kind, especially to men, so the more you neg a girl, the more likely she is going to be to try to like get your approval or some fucking horrible reverse psychology bullshit,
right?
Which I've never tried because that sounds horrifying. And I was raised by decent human beings. But, I mean, also, that seems to me like that would fail horribly because, you know, because I am a nice guy and I don't want to, like, make someone feel horrible. And what if, like, we really hit it off and you make a cool connection with someone and a few years later you do, like, have some, like, deeper connection relationship with them? You can't be like, oh, you remember when I used to call you a bitch? So, it's, I don't know. It just seems fucking crazy to me that people use social media like casual social media in that way anyway, but for Twitter specifically, it seems extra crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing there has to be at least one successful relationship on this planet right now that started on Twitter, but I couldn't tell you who it was.
Yeah.
Certainly not me.
I'm sure there's a handful, though, but
I've used apps specifically for meeting people and have failed miserably, so I can't imagine that Twitter would all of a sudden be the gold mine for me.
That's funny.
I retweeted this like last week or something, but like 5 years ago on a dating website, I actually had a woman email me to tell me the reasons why she would never go out with me. Unprovoked. Wow. I didn't say a word to her, and all of a sudden I get this lengthy email explaining. She's like, I'm not saying you're a bad guy, but blah, 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 blah. I'm like, what?
Was it helpful at all? Like,
no, it was just weird. It was like...
Just weird and mean?
Not even mean, really. It was just weird. Like, you know, if your beard was like 2 inches longer, I'd totally feel differently. It's like, okay, well,
okay, you should talk to my brother. His beard was 8 inches.
Like, I didn't know how to respond. I think I just respond and go, thank you, I'll take all that into consideration. Because I had
that's the best thing you can probably say.
I was just like sitting at my desk, like laughing, going, I don't even know what to say to this.
You should have screenshot it and posted the picture on Twitter. And then you've been like, finally, now I know why. #WhyI'mSingle.
Maybe she was just trying to neg you. Maybe it was maybe she read the same men's rights fucking page and thought it would apply.
It could be.
I'd probably cry. I'm so insecure.
Oh, I totally am. But at this point, I just think it's all funny because I'm like, oh, look at this, more evidence. Just throw that on a pile with the rest of it.
Oh, that's awful.
People don't believe me when I tell them this stuff, or at least some people don't. My boss doesn't believe me, but
oh, I've seen it all firsthand, so I'm fully aware. Alrighty, moving on. Underrated. Now, I know everyone sees these silly hashtags, like almost like hashtag games or whatever, like, you know, make a movie 80s or make this something else. And sometimes those are pretty fun, not going to lie. Sometimes I'll log on just to see what the trending tags are so that I can maybe possibly participate. And then I think to myself, like, I totally just nailed this. And, like, nobody likes it. And then I get all mad, and then I stop. There was the one a couple of weeks ago where you turn a celebrity into food, and I nailed one. I don't remember. I got to look it up now. I'm going to blurt it out in the middle of yours, but...
Okay.
Well, you remember, because I was trying to ask you. We were at Barnes & Noble. I'm like, dude, give me something good. Celebrity with food. And I killed it, and nobody liked it. I was so...
And maybe you did not, quote-unquote,
oh,
kill
I did.
Anything.
I did.
Was it all stuff... I didn't see this one. Was it stuff like Cherry Seinfeld, like stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, yeah. I love those games, man. There was... The very first one I ever went with was... when Romney was running, and he was, I think it was during the RNC, Republican National Convention, during, was that 2012? And there was one called the Romney Death Rally. And I got so into it, I posted like fucking 10 of them, and maybe not that many, but it felt like a lot. But it just turned into this like insane, like Lovecraftian, nihilistic, like existential horror poem. If you read them all together, there's actually someone put all of them together as a poem, and it's fucking amazing, and it's so gross. People talking, I had one that said something about like Herman Cain coming out wearing a powdered wig that was actually like an undulating horde of maggots upon his skull or something. And there are people talking about like Katie Couric bathing in a pond of virgin blood and stuff. It was just fucking crazy. And I mean, they're all of the ones that are actually on there are way better than any ones I just said, but I definitely recommend going back in time and looking at Romney Death Rally. It's all great.
I actually might just have to do that. And I found it. It was, the hashtag was cook a celeb.
Okay.
And the first one that I had liked and retweeted actually did pretty well. And it was Celine Dion. So
oh, yeah,
I'm like, oh my god, I got it. Julianne S'mores.
Ooh, that is good.
Nothing. I got 3 retweets, and they were probably all me.
Well, you know, a lot of times, like, I'll come up with something, and one of those, there was one that was a fat indie band.
I love those.
And mine, and I was like, oh my god, I got it. It, like, immediately popped in my head. I go, Band of Hostess. And I tweeted it, and I was so proud of myself, and then I was like, wait a minute, and I searched Band of Hostess. Like, even though I came up with it independently, I was like maybe the 700th person to come up with that one.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible when you think you nailed it, and you're just, nope.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool that you know, to know, like, how much we actually do share in common when it comes to those things.
Right. But yeah, anywho, that was my underrated, was those hashtag games. They're all pretty fun. Or they can be, if they're done right.
Yeah, not mean-spirited.
Right, exactly.
Anyway.
Storms are rolling in here.
They are, definitely. My underrated is being able to tag minor celebrities and have them either retweet or respond to you.
Nice.
I was so pumped when I tweeted something about how much I loved Ed Brubaker, and he liked my tweet.
That is fun. I do like when that happens.
Yeah, I don't get like Alec Baldwin, which if I did, I'd quit my job. But if I get like Krista Faust or Frank Barbieri or somebody up to that level to retweet me or say, hey, man, thanks, I'm like, yes, totally worth it. And then I could like take a screenshot and send it to people and be like, I'm friends with this guy for the next 10 minutes. Suck it.
Yeah, that's true. I like that. I got a... I wish there was a place to like store all those, like a little fake gallery where you can store all the like super cool tweets or like mentions or retweets you got from people like that.
Yeah,
I got a couple retweets from Marc Maron, once a long time ago because I sent him a record because I liked his podcast so much I knew he liked vinyl, so I sent him a vinyl and he wrote back to me like thanking me for it and telling me the record was. He'll listen to it again. It was totally heavy. I was like, yes, that's so awesome. And then another time I had drawn a black metal logo that said Marin, and I just tweeted it, and he retweeted it, and I got a bunch of people following me from that. I thought that was really great.
Into it.
Yeah.
So yeah, my...
Marlo Meekins, she's responded and retweeted a couple things, and I don't know if you know her. She's completely insane, and she's really great.
No, I never heard of her.
Oh, she's crushingly beautiful, and she's a really great artist, and she's really, really crazy. But, like, fun crazy, like, dresses her dogs up in outfits and all that stuff. Like, she's real, real, real bonkers. I think she's an old hardcore kid, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's, like, just crushingly beautiful, but, like, in a really, like, almost like a 1940s movie star way. So, yeah, she's great. But anyway, I agree. I think that's good. Mine, for me, what Twitter helps me do, and a lot of my friends actually have asked me to stop doing this because it bums them out, but I'm able to, like, fill tiny little digital bottles with my most depressing and horrific thoughts and just send them into the world instead of, like, internalizing them. Like, it really helps me kind of get through some, like, horrible shit I go through all the time to be able to sort of vocalize something and just send it out to, like, some random people. Just knowing that I'm sharing it sometimes makes it less, like, horrible. So for me, I mean, I think the therapy of being able to expel negative thoughts into a place where, you know, someone, like it or not, will actually see them helps for me. I try not to do anything that would hurt anyone, of course, except for maybe myself, but yeah, so that's it. it helps with depression by depressing others.
I could see how that actually would be beneficial, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's like therapeutic, just kind of releasing mm-hmm. it. Like, what's that Olympic thing?
Curling.
Curling, yes. Curling. You're the guy, you're just like, off into Twitter. There goes all of my worries.
Yeah, it helps. Yeah, I had a friend just a little while ago. I'd be like, can you please stop? Seriously.
Yeah, I've always thought about that, but I wouldn't want to do it because I would have to create a fake account just because I wouldn't want people to know my deep dark secrets.
You know, honestly, it's better. It's almost better to do it on Twitter because it kind of just comes and goes.
I think Twitter deletes your tweets.
Does it?
I believe so because I tried to find one of my old tweets. It's not there anymore.
Huh. And it, no, but I never looked into that.
It was something I tweeted to Obama, so maybe that's why. But you know, it's completely gone.
Way to go, Romney.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I hope Romney death rally is still there.
It was my frustration over the, you know, if you don't have insurance, you have to pay like $800. Like, I had to pay $800 and some odd last year because I don't have insurance. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's great that you're trying to give millions of people insurance, and I'm all for it. But, like, if I don't have it, if I can't afford insurance, I can't afford your fines either. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
And I did it with the hashtag too poor pay more, and when I searched it, it's gone. I went through my Twitter feed all the way back to the beginning of time, and it's gone.
Hmm. Interesting.
We're talking some more Twitter conspiracies here.
That's it, yeah. It's a big one.
Yeah, I'm taking down the government. Alrighty. Now, we got a few minutes left, so best thing ever. This is going to be a long one, so strap in, folks. All right. few months ago, I chipped a filling on my one tooth. So, not having insurance, I waited until I was able to get dental insurance, which I did. I went to the dentist earlier this week. Boom. Best thing ever. Yeah, that chipped tooth turned into a root canal. Yay me. Yeah, and second best thing ever, my dentist doesn't take my new insurance. Boom. So, seeing as though he was already in the middle of the procedure, that's $300 out of my pocket. And now I have half a root canal, and I have to find a new dentist to finish the root canal, which I did find, and including the insurance, still is going to cost me $1,000 out of pocket. Pa-pow!
Man, I have misunderstood the best thing ever for a while.
Yeah, super, super sarcastic today on that one.
Yeah, that is awful, man. Yeah. Teeth shit is fucking bananas. I hate that stuff.
It is, and that's why I've, you know, for years I tell everybody, like, if you are in pain, it is already too late, so make sure you go on a regular basis, and that's what I was doing until I lost my insurance. And then I went, like, a year and a half without going, then I chipped a tooth, and I was like, shit. And now, because of my stupidity, I am out $1,300 that I don't have.
Oh, man.
Yay me.
Yeah, that sounds really great.
Right?
I'm sorry to hear that. That is fucking awful, man.
Yeah. Eh. I when it comes to dentistry and teeth stuff, I always expect the worst. This will be my third root canal, and I've had 7 teeth pulled in my life, so I always expect the worst when it comes to dentists.
Every dentist, that could be their tagline under their business card.
Right? Expect the worst. The
worst. Well, that is a bummer.
Yeah. Yay.
Is Brian's happier?
I don't know. He's just staring at his phone.
Mine is my coworker, who is not listening, so I don't care, who is the worst human being alive, called in sick today. Not super awesome, but
that's a step up.
Definitely, when I was leaving for work and my friend texted me and he said, she's not coming today, I was like, I don't really care, but please indulge me as to why. And he said, she's sick again. I'm like, hopefully she's sick forever, because she's the worst. No, I could go for hours. I won't bore you at this point, but yeah, it's like the sky opens up and the sun comes out and the birds start singing every time she takes a day off, because she makes my days aggravating at best and miserable more often than I care to admit.
That is intense.
She is not my favorite person ever. So, yeah. A brief reprieve, but better than nothing.
Nice. Okay. Well, my best thing ever was pretty good.
Yeah, you saved the day.
I did. No, my best thing ever is I gave a best man speech, and it went over super well. I had been working on it for a few days, and I was super nervous to do it. I mean, even though I stand on stage with a guitar and a microphone and say shit all the time, talking in front of people terrifies me. I'm not a good public speaker.
I think it's different when it's a group of strangers compared to family and friends.
Yeah, it is. But that was a big deal. I mean, it was all these people that I wanted to, like, you know, I was like, this is it. This is the best man toast. Like, this is the thing I'm supposed to do for my best friend, you know, a guy that I've known forever. So I worked my hardest on writing something down, and I worked on it all, like, I'd be at work, like, pretending I was delivering it, like, you know, pausing and stuff. And I was doing my best, and I had something okay. And then my friend Tom, who I've mentioned on the podcast a few times, I told him that I was kind of stressing about it. He goes, well, why don't you give it to me right now? I'm thinking, like, oh, that sounds fucking terrifying, just to stand here in the room and just give a speech to you. But then I was like, you know what? I should. If I can't just do it to my friend right here, like, how am I going to do it in a room full of, like, 100 people? So I went over the speech with him, and he had a ton of great pointers. He helped me rewrite the whole thing. He helped me make it flow, like, way better, and gave me a bunch of big pointers, the big one being to slow down. I'm a fast talker, and when I get nervous, I speed up. And he he gave me like a few good habits and gave me a few pointers on how to like kind of retool the speech a little bit, and it went over super well, like to the point where everyone was super nice about it. People really was like talked to me about it all night. Like I was just like, this is great. So yeah, funny, people laughed. I was like, God, I feel like a comedian. This is awesome. So yeah, I gave a speech in front of about 100 people, and it went over super well. I told the maid of honor it was going to be pretty short. I was like, yeah, mine's pretty short. She goes, oh, mine is too. She goes, can I go first? I go, yeah, you can go first. And then mine was like 5 minutes with like me walking around the room and like introducing people and shit. And when she was over, she's like, you should have fucking told me. Like, there was no way I was going to go after you. She's like, I would have had to make up an entire new thing on the spot if I'd gone after you. So,
well, that's good.
I felt very good. It was kind of part of this whole, like, that was, like, sort of the beginning of me kind of renewing this whole, my life. Like, I'm trying to make more positive change, meet new people, and try to find happiness. So, that's my best thing ever.
I like it. That's good. All righty. Well, I don't have it in front of me. I know Chris picked his number ones ready. If anyone knows off the top of their head, we can give a heads up.
Black Hammer? Yeah, that's Black Hammer and what was the other one?
Snot Girl.
Super pumped for that
one. I feel like Snot Girl's been out for a while now. I've seen that in the store.
I thought that was a joke till he told us it was actually going to be his pick.
Yeah.
Well, there you have it. Next week, Black Hammer and Snot Girl. That's, I can't wait.
Two separate books, FYI.
Although...
It's not Black Hammer and Snot Girl together.
Although, next Thursday, I am finishing my root canal, so I may or may not be on that one. We'll see.
I don't know. If you're really fucked up, you should totally be honest.
That would be kind of funny.
That would be amazing.
Well, it's not like I'm going to be put under. It's just going to be I'm going to have a numb face. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to drool on my computer. I guess, but we'll see how I feel.
Like David after the dentist or something.
No. Well, I mean, if the books are really terrible too, I might just sit out. But anywho, that's our show for the week. You can find me on Twitter at XorcinX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can find Damien at Damien Johnson, and you can find all of our shows at ComicRoast.com. Don't forget to check out ReviewAndRoast.com. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.